It's the Shilling Show, online at shillingshow.com, and weekdays from noon to 2 right here. We're here for you each and every weekday on News Radio 1070 WINA, and he's here with us each and every month, and we always have great conversations. You would do well to take note of the things that we talk about here because, hey, money is hard to come by, and you want to make sure you can keep as much of it as possible. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management. We're talking about five investment mistakes in light of markets over the past year. And David, thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me back.
All right, so this is where I want to start off with. Perhaps an evaluation of markets over the past year. Some people follow this. Some people only look at what happened last week because that's what's fresh in their mind. What's actually happened over the last year?
Yeah, so for 2015, we had mostly a down market. The resource stock category fell apart. It was down 24%. Because of the lower oil prices, which kind of wreaked havoc on a lot of different parts of the economy. And just people don't realize how much the economy is all put together. Resource stocks being down and those companies making less money and having less employment actually affects the high-yield bond category because high-yield bonds are quite often oil ventures. And so that category is now under risk of more defaults. And the economy is just all interconnected. And very difficult to predict. Even as I say, you know, that energy stocks might affect long or the high yield bond category, or it might not. and that's what the markets are like. They're just inherently volatile. And after the fact, we create narratives that connect things together as though, oh, of course we should have known that resource stocks were going to go down. Of course we should have known that oil prices were going to continue to fall as much as they have. I've been back and I've looked at predictions on where oil prices are going, and they're almost always wrong. People usually predict it will continue to go in whatever direction it's going until it changes, and then they predict it's going to go in the other direction. And so, you know, so they're not very, very close about that. Foreign stocks actually made money in local currencies and lost money in U.S. dollars because of the currency exchange. The dollar is strengthening. A lot of people can't figure out why the dollar is strengthening, given that M2, the money supply is very high and has gone up. People expect that to push inflation. It hasn't pushed inflation for a couple of reasons. One, that the government has underreported inflation by about 1% at least for a while. But more importantly, the velocity of money is very low, and the money that's actually experienced in the economy is the M2 times the velocity of money, and the velocity of money is at a 30-year low. The banks are sitting on all that cash, and so you don't see that cash in circulation. And then U.S. stocks actually had the best return of all the categories. It was up 1.3%. So it was down from the middle of the year and kind of fell apart in the middle of the summer. So you've got a lot of different things going on. And every year is unique in what happened. It has its own sort of fingerprint. And then the next year, it either is completely different or it's more of the same, but it's more like a coin toss. Which one it's going to be than it is one follows on the other. And people like to think that the market is going in a certain direction. They say that, you know, resource stocks are going down, and they put it in the present tense as though that's going to continue, and yet there's no guarantee it's going to continue. In fact, there's a little bit of a contrarian movement. What's gone down in the past is more likely to go up, and what's gone up in the past is more likely to go down.
So this is interesting because any of these things could change on a dime. I mean, if you have some instability in the Middle East, let's just say that America shoots down an Iranian drone that was hovering over one of our aircraft carriers, Iran reacts to that, or something happens in North Korea, something that upsets the apple cart, all of a sudden we're going to see these things go rocketing up in price, wouldn't we?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Or if the economy picks back up, or if the Chinese economy picks back up, or if there's some shortage in supply, those things tend to turn fairly quickly. And resource stocks and the price of oil is more volatile than just the U.S. stock market as a whole. And yet, even if you look at the U.S. stock market, you know that I've got an index of all the returns from 1926 on. And the absolute worst year was 1931. The markets were down 43.5%. Just 2 years later, in 1933, that's the best year, up 56.7%. Mm. So the markets are very volatile, and they move out on the edges of the bell curve more frequently than a bell curve would normally move.
Now, when markets go down, the money goes, at least some people get out, the money goes somewhere else. Is there something that's counterbalancing, or is everything kind of depressed right now?
Markets move on a very, very small number of traders. I found out much later in life that my grandfather was actually working for a market maker on Wall Street. Mm-hmm. He got his banking degree in March of 1929, and he was working there from 1929 in the crash.
Wow.
Clear through 1931. I didn't know that until much later. But his company made a market for every company on the New York Stock Exchange. There has to be at least one market maker, and for the S&P 500, there's usually five or six. And a market maker is always willing to buy or sell a certain stock, and there's a spread between the two, so they're willing to buy it for mm-hmm. a little bit less, and they're willing to sell it for a little bit more, and they make a little bit of money on the spread. And his company made a market in one of the Dow 11 components back then, and it was the American Can Company. It was a cutting-edge technology company that had the brilliant idea of putting food in cans. It had never been done before. And so if someone wanted to sell American Can Company stock and no one else wanted to buy it, his company would buy the stock from them and move the price up. And so they'd continually move the price up. And there's rules for that. And if someone wanted to sell the stock and no one else wanted to buy it, they'd move the price down. So sometimes, if there are more sellers than buyers, like there were when Lehman Brothers was trying to liquidate their entire holdings, the price just moves down because there are no buyers, and it can move down precipitously, but it can never go to zero, because the minute it starts going towards zero, I could pull the pocket change out of my pocket, and I could buy the entire S&P 500. And long before I would do that, people with much more money than me would start to buy, and they'd find resistance. And so the markets can never go to zero. You know, you always hear the gold ads. Gold has never gone to zero. Well, mm-hmm. the markets have never gone to zero either, and they're much more profitable and less volatile than gold.
We're talking with David Morata, five investing mistakes in light of the markets over the past year. We'll get to those mistakes and what's not a mistake on the other side. We also welcome your questions or comments for David. You can call us at 977-1070. Ellie stands by, and The Shilling Show returns after news and weather at the bottom of the hour. Nine 77 1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. We continue with David Morata, the president of Morata Wealth Management, online at MorataOnMoney.com. We're talking about five investment mistakes in light of markets over the past year. So let's talk about mistake number one, David.
Yeah, probably the biggest mistake that I see people do is to abandon a brilliant long-term investment strategy to chase short-term returns. Short term is really anything under 10 years. You can have 10 years in the S&P 500 in which it's flat or negative, and the returns look terrible, and it looks like you shouldn't have been invested. But those flat or negative, or even, you know, down 20% returns are followed by incredibly positive returns, and the market corrections and the bear markets are followed by what end up being bull markets. And that's just a normal sort of cycle in the markets. So when you abandon a brilliant strategy to chase short-term returns, what you end up doing is you end up narrowing your portfolio to just recent winners. And this concentrates your portfolio into just a few holdings. It actually increases the volatility. And because they've gone up recently, it increases the chances of a concentrated portfolio going down tremendously. So in the end of the 1990s, people were abandoning the S&P 500 mm-hmm. to invest more and more into technology mutual funds, the number one holding of which was all Cisco, because that was the number one holding in the S&P mm-hmm. 500 as well. And so people ended up having all a portfolio consisting of maybe 30% Cisco spread out over five different mutual funds, and they were all technology companies. And of course, in 2000, those tanked tremendously for the next 3 years. So the diversification really does help. And being globally diversified into categories, including categories which have gone down over the last 5 years, is actually a much better strategy.
They say what most goes up must come down. Is there anything in the investment category that has gone up, maybe not every year, but has just gone up consistently year after year after year? Is it really true, though, that what goes up must come down?
Yeah, in the investing world, it's actually more positive than that, because most of the stock market returns, if you look at long periods of time, mm-hmm. they go up and they go up and they go up. But the volatility that's added on top of that as they jag around is tremendous. I liken it to a man with a whip, and the markets are the tip of the whip, and he's snapping the whip up and down and up and down, but he's riding an escalator that's going up. And so very gradually, the lows get higher and the highs get higher, but in the interim, it just looks crazy as it goes up and down. And if anyone, you know, sort of doubts the positive influence of the returns, the free markets in the United States, if you invested a dollar in the index, if you will, back in 1926, that dollar would be worth $5,386 today.
Wow.
So, and that's over, just an 89-year period, it's gone up that much. And small cap, which is riskier and more volatile, would have grown $1 to $16,743. Mm. That's tremendous. Now, you know, if you just invest that in, say, treasury bills, which is kind of the equivalent of money market, your dollar would have grown to $21. So bonds just don't grow as much as stocks do. They don't have the same returns. But one of the principles that is true within the investing industry is that you don't get returns without getting volatility too. Mm-hmm. Those two almost always go together. And so being willing to risk the money in the markets and risk it for the long term is a good thing. On average, if you invest today in the S&P 500, after 12 and a half years, just the price index, not including all the dividends, after 12 and a half years, on average, you will have doubled your money and it will never go below that doubling again. So anything below 5 years, we consider short-term investing. Anything over 10 years, we consider long-term investing. And you really need to be a long-term investor because with the volatility comes great returns.
Let's go to mistake number two.
Yeah, mistake number two is really allowing yourself to regret good decisions just because they lost money in the short run. We try to make a distinction between a mistake, a wrong decision, you should have known better, and just unfortunate returns. Mm-hmm. You can invest in something and it can go down, and that's not a mistake. It's just unfortunate. It will come back in time if it's a good investment. But the regret makes you do the wrong thing. In fact, there's a great investing book called The Behavior Gap. It's really written for people who are not full-time investors, but I know a lot of full-time investors mm-hmm. who follow it because he writes in little simple cartoons about what investing is, back-of-the-napkin type illustrations. At any rate, the behavior gap is the emotions that push us to do the exact wrong thing. And so being too emotional about returns cause you to get out of things that have gone down and to go into things that have gone up, and that's the behavior gap of the exact wrong thing that we should be doing. Really, the mistake is focusing on what you can't control. There are so many things that you can control that you should be focused on that should be where you put your time and effort. And in fact, one of those is tax planning, as you suggested earlier mm-hmm. in the show. Tax planning is a huge opportunity to move money from where it's going to be taxed to move to where it won't be taxed. And the government headwinds on taxation really make it so that you have to navigate that labyrinth to try to avoid getting hit with taxes every single year. We do a lot of Roth conversions as a result. Mm-hmm. And so just focusing on what you should do and you have control over and not regretting what you had no control over and wasn't even a mistake. It was just unfortunate.
Let's go before the break to mistake number three.
Yeah, mistake number three is hesitating to continue being invested in the markets or hesitating to rebalance your portfolio. A lot of people think, well, I know that's gone down and this other thing has gone up, but I'm not going to rebalance and sell the thing that's gone up and buy the thing that's gone down because I just don't have the stomach for it. It just feels wrong. And yet that's where the rebalancing bonus is gained. And on average, the rebalancing bonus is probably about 1.6%, which means if you did nothing but just press the rebalance button every year, you'd get an extra 1.6%. Now, you know, when the markets are down 20%, 1.6 doesn't seem like a whole lot. But over your investing career, 1.6% is a tremendous benefit. People do this in their 401ks. They set their 401ks on auto rebalance, and that's brilliant. You should. You shouldn't peek. You ignore your 401k. You throw the money in. You do the auto rebalance, and you're all set. Women tend to be willing to do that more than men, and as a result, women often have higher investing returns than men do because that rebalancing bonus is just so valuable. Not a mistake is continuing to add to your investments, so to continuing to shovel that money back in. Building wealth is created by what you save and invest, not by what you spend. And I say save and invest because if you don't invest it, you won't get the market rates of return. Mm-hmm. You'll just get those money market rates of return, which are pretty pitiful.
There was a caller off the air who said, what does David think about investing in gold and silver? Let's get to that before we go to the break.
Yeah, great. So the average return of the stock market is 6% over, 6.5% over inflation. The average return on gold is 0% over inflation. It just keeps up with inflation. The volatility on the stock market is about plus or minus 18%. The volatility on gold is closer to plus or minus, I don't know what the number is, it could be as high as 40%. So gold has an average return of 0 and a volatility that's tremendously high. The stock market has a lower volatility and a higher average return. And what that means is, believe it or not, investing in gold, just gold coins, is actually a mistake. The correct asset allocation, according to any kind of investment theory, the correct asset allocation to gold is 0. Now, I know a lot of people who want to have a little bit of gold. In fact, I know some families for whom they only got their families out of Nazi Germany because they had gold coins. Mm-hmm. And I understand the impetus to have a little bit in gold or silver. I think I wrote an article back, the 26 things you need to have in addition to gold and silver if you really want to be prepared. And they're everything from, you know, food and water and, you know, everything else. Because when things fall apart for a couple of days, you really need to have your pet's medications and your medications and all the other things before you need to have gold and silver. Because gold and silver isn't going to do you any good if you don't have all those other things. So I do understand preparing for, even a big snowstorm requires a lot of stuff. You know, and gold and silver is maybe somewhere on the list, but it's not particularly high. And it's not a good investment strategy. The better investment strategy is to be invested in the entire companies and completely around the world so that if something befalls one part of the world, you still have great value in lots of other parts of the world.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have one segment left with David Murata today. Love to hear from you. He's online at Murata on Money. We'll come back and finish up the last couple of mistakes, the investing mistakes in light of markets over the past year, and then talk about where we go from here. Stay tuned to The Shilling Show. More ahead.
Well, I pulled out of Pittsburgh, rolling down that eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up and she's running like I never before.
A Shilling Show continues here with David Murata. We're talking about investing mistakes and what happens when you look back instead of looking forward. Let's look to mistake number 4 because it has to do with planning.
Yeah, mistake number 4 is just not having a plan. Not having an asset allocation, not knowing, you know, what you will do when the markets go up or down. Most investors who come to see us don't have a plan. They have a collection of investments. They've usually collected them eclectically just by one by one buying stuff, and then they don't sell it. And so they've never really reviewed their portfolio. They've never looked to see, is everything in one category because that's the category they're familiar with. So there's sort of a familiarity bias that goes on when you invest. A lot of people don't invest in foreign stocks because they don't really understand what foreign stocks do. They think of, you know, American companies. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you list the top 10 holdings in Switzerland, and they say, but I know all those companies. Those are all companies I know. I know Nestle. I didn't know they were a Swiss company. Oh, I guess they were, yeah. So it's very difficult when you start collecting investments to actually have a plan unless you sit down to make the plan initially. And then if you don't know what you're going to do when the markets go down, you just worry and you don't add anything to it because you don't want to add it when it's going down, present tense. What you don't realize, it just went down. So now stocks are on sale. And if you think about it that way, then the rebalancing efforts are very easy. Stocks are on sale. So now if I throw more money in, I will actually get a better return. And so if I take some of my bonds and I sell them and I put it in the stock markets and I buy it, I'm buying when it's low. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to buy when it's low and then sell when it's high. So it's not a mistake to stick to your plan as long as it was a good idea initially. And differentiating between unfortunate returns and mistakes is helps you do that. And probably the biggest mistake I see people make with their investments, these are investments that should be sold, you should get out of them, are investments with a high expense ratio. And so we analyze very carefully every single fund. We're looking for low expense ratios. We build portfolios that the expense ratio is about 0.22%. The average mutual fund has an expense ratio that's about 1.28%. Mm-hmm. So it's a full percent higher. And that full percent higher means lower returns by about that percent. So we try to build portfolios. At this point, the highest expense ratio of anything we invest in, I think, is 0.6. And then we've got a whole bunch of things below that that go down all the way to 0.05. And at this point, I don't think I would invest in anything above 0.6. Even the 0.6 seems a little bit expensive on the expensive side to us. But we think it has a high enough return, expected return, that we're willing to spend the 0.6 to invest in it.
David, let's go to the last mistake. And this one's an interesting one because it's probably hard for some people.
Yeah, you know, it's especially difficult to get on the radio and say, don't listen to the news.
Right.
You know, but the mistake is listening to financial media. And because long-term investing is really, you can study it in a book. You don't need to hear what's happening today. Because of that, the financial news media needs to figure out what is going to push people and make them uncomfortable mm-hmm. enough to continue to read and come back to see what's happening. And so they purposefully trouble the listener to get them to come back to listen to more news, because whatever happens tomorrow needs to be newsworthy enough that you're going to come back and listen. So I know a lot of financial advisors, there's a term we have for it. We call it financial pornography, because you get addicted to it
mm-hmm.
and you kind of can't take your eyes off of it. But, it, you know, it's always, you know, the 10 hot funds that will do well in February and you know, here's six things you need to do in order to do that. If you get into the best of those articles, they're really just timeless advice. Mm-hmm. And the worst of them are terrible advice because they're trading on short-term investing. I think it was John Bogle or Warren Buffett. They both have the same advice, and that is just don't peek at your portfolio. Just don't look at it. Invest for the long term and then take stock of it periodically. And when you take stock of it, it's generally to rebalance. So you can rebalance once a year, and that's perfectly okay. We have a little bit more frequent rebalancing mm-hmm. bonus for our clients. But you could rebalance once a year, and that's good enough. And so if you have a plan and you stick to it, and then you ignore the news, and you put your portfolio on automatic rebalancing or delegating that to a trusted advisor, that's really the right way to do it, and then not look. Because our minds are wired to be so emotional that they cause us to do the wrong thing.
You know, it took me a long time to get past this, because there was a time when I used to like to have everything in Quicken, mm-hmm. you know, from the various accounts. And I would look at it at the end of the day, and it would say, okay, you're up like $300, you're down $200, or whatever it was for that day. And it's like, oh, you know, but then I started realizing that, you know, you never really made or lost anything until you sell. I mean,
right.
it's just all on paper, so you haven't done that. So what's really the point in all of this, you know?
Right. It's almost like looking at it to keep score, and, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things I think that men do more than women. They look at it to keep score.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
And when they talk to one another, they're always talking about the one thing that went up. So it always mm-hmm. sounds like they did better than everybody else.
Right.
I found out our brains are actually wired such that we want to be better than everyone else, even more than we want to be successful.
Mm.
It's a terrible impetus, and they've done studies, and people would rather have everybody get $2,000. Then they get $5,000, but somebody else gets $10,000. There's a deep-seated envy that's built into it. I think it's a horrible part of human nature, and it actually causes the problems in politics quite a lot. As people say, "Well, I really don't care if it makes me poorer, so long as we stick it to the 1%, because those winners, we just need to bring them down a notch or two. They're just strutting too much like peacocks." And I work with a lot of very, of high net worth clients, and they are just as humble as everyone else. In mm-hmm. fact, in some ways, they have less envy and less money focus, and they think money doesn't necessarily make them better than anyone else. Whereas everyone else seems to, you know, poor people can actually have a terrible money envy and bitterness about the whole thing that can be there just as much as a rich person can. Most of our clients are the millionaire next door. They made mm-hmm. their money simply by saving and investing, and they saved and invest on very small salaries. It only takes, you know, $100 a month to build $1 million in 30 years, and so it's good to just put away that $100 every month, and then by the time you're retired, you'll have the million or two that you need in order to be able to retire successfully.
We've just got a short time left. Phyllis, go right ahead. You're on with David Murata.
Hi, David. This is superb. It's so fascinating. I'm learning. I'm taking notes. Question. Oh, do you have a simple little paper that you give out to high schools every place so that kids know this before they leave school and, you know, start to work and get families?
Yeah, you know, it's probably another conversation, how to teach children. Children need three things. They need book learning, they need examples, and then they need experience. It actually is more important for them to get the experience investing. So the best thing that you could, and the experience spending and earning money. And so that's probably the most important thing. Our website is, we take books that then boil it down into a single article. And so the single article makes it much easier. So we have a lot of people who listen to, who subscribe to our email at muradonmoney.com, and they get an email twice a week with some articles on investing.
Phyllis, thank you for the call. David, we're running out of time, but thanks so much as always. It was a great hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's go to the break. We'll take open phones at the top of the next hour.